following podcast may contain spoilers, profanity, and views or opinions that may not be representative of the author's intent of the articles discussed. We don't always take ourselves or the subject matter seriously either. Listener discretion is advised.
The following is a Galactic Network podcast.
Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 228, recorded on Thursday, September 7th, 2017. I'm Dave Nelson, along with Mr. Brad Ludwig. Hello, Brad.
Hello.
Do you want to know what's coming up on this episode?
Yeah.
Pop culture aliens ranked from most to least helpful. And are we turning Earth into an alien planet? Do you have the answer for that?
I think I might.
Okay. Those stories plus our sighting and picks. Before all that, though, our question.
Dave?
Huh?
Dave?
Huh?
Hey, Dave, what's the question?
What alien race from fiction, I'm talking movies, TV shows, books, games, whatever, would you want to have a beer with or a mixed drink or, you know, some kind of cocktail, or if you don't drink, a lemonade or an iced tea? I'm having a nice iced tea.
You're saying if I were to have a beverage with any alien, a representative from any alien race, with whom would it be?
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself.
I'm kind of thinking a representative of the Q continuum.
Oh, yeah, because things might get crazy and you guys could do weird, you know, like amazing things with their powers.
That's what I'm thinking.
Mm. What if you piss him or her off and they decide to use their powers against you, like fling you across the galaxy and you accidentally like discover a race that wants to kill you? Oh, wait a second.
I think that's been done, and I don't think I would worry about it. Okay. Hopefully I've consumed enough beverages that I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay, so my answer at first was going to be the Klingons, but they drink that blood wine, and they get violent.
Yeah.
They get very violent.
You don't want to hang out with a mean drunk, Dave.
No. And they seem like they're that whole race, they're a bunch of mean drunks. So I'm going to give an answer, a very specific answer, that kind of goes outside the purview of the original thought for this question. But I think I'd want to have a drink at Quark's on Deep Space Nine with Morn.
Huh.
Do you remember Morn? Big guy.
No.
Didn't speak. He was basically, the inside joke was he was Norm from Cheers, but with the letters changed. Norm Morn. He was always at the bar. Even like when Quark was opening the bar, he was like the first one at the door, and he never spoke. So that's cool with me, because I'm not a big talker. Well, I mean, I talk for a living and I talk on these podcasts, but I'm happy just sitting someplace and observing my surroundings, taking in the atmosphere, and I don't need to talk. But I think he talks, we just never heard him, and when he did talk, this is just thinking out loud, this is my guess or my wish, he would say amazing things.
That is interesting.
So
that's, and he actually perishes in an episode, doesn't he?
Oh, he does! But he's not really dead. They use his death to like try to solve a crime of some kind, I think. I think that's how it went. Yeah. Okay.
There we go. Who Mourns Morn?
Yes, that's the name of the episode. Exactly. Okay. So that's my answer. What's your answer? I'm not talking to you, Brad. I'm talking to the listener. What's your answer? Who would you want to have a drink with? Let us know. 805-328-3966.
In the news...
This is kind of a throwback to the kind of stories that we used to bring to this show once in a while. In honor of the Close Encounters of the Third Kind 40th anniversary, let that sink in.
Wow.
Entertainment Weekly compared that alien race with others. Okay? Pop culture aliens ranked from most to least helpful.
This is a solid list.
Okay.
Of the two that are of the most helpful and the two of the least, I think it's pretty spot on.
Okay. All right. Well, let's jump in here. The most helpful is the aliens from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. All right? They're happy to help us. This is what E.T. wrote on this blog post. For most of Close Encounters, the aliens are a mystery. What are those lights in the sky? Why did so many people go missing? But after much theorizing and translating human language into light arrays, the humans and aliens come to an understanding. All the kidnapped people are released, and in turn, humans get to visit the alien mothership in what looks like the beginning of a beautiful friendship. You know what? I always wanted to know what happened to the people that went with the aliens at the end. Spoiler alert. Of Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
I think you get a free pass on that because it's been a very long time.
I actually remember reading this. E.T., the extraterrestrial, was supposed to be, I think, a sequel to Close Encounters, but he didn't want to make a sequel, so he made a completely new alien movie. I believe that's how that went. So I don't think we'll ever know what happened to Richard Dreyfuss. Okay, here's my guess. The aliens didn't turn out to be as nice as they let on. They were actually very cruel, and they put Richard Dreyfuss in a zoo, and so they wouldn't kill him. Richard Dreyfuss would make mountains out of mashed potatoes every day.
Okay.
I'm just theorizing. That's just me spitballing. I could be wrong about that.
Maybe they have a thing for mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah. Okay, here's the second, more on the helpful side. Trying to help us the day the Earth stood still. Despite our sole stewardship of the planet Earth, humans often seem to screw things up for ourselves. No crap. At two different points over the past century, when we threatened to screw up particularly badly situations, a version of the Day the Earth Stood Still has come out, featuring the alien Klaatu coming to warn humans to change our ways. Although Klaatu wants us to change our behavior, it's a warning for our own sakes. If we refuse, he'll just have his giant robot incinerate us. Did you like the remake?
I have never seen the remake, and I do want to see it.
It's a little slow at times, and it's missing a certain spark. But it's still pretty good. Keanu Reeves, you can only do with so much with that guy, right?
Fair enough.
We're going to the least helpful side of this, okay? Will help us taste better to serve man. The aliens from this iconic episode of The Twilight Zone are certainly tricky. They want to help humans, even giving them a special book titled To Serve Man. Of course, what the humans realize too late is that these aliens are well aware of the double meaning of the word serve, leading to that famous shout from Susan Cummings, Codebreaker.
It's a cookbook!
I haven't seen that for a long time. I'll have to revisit that episode one of those
days.
Oh,
boy, yeah. It's one of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes.
It's such an iconic, when you think of the Twilight Zone, that's one of the ones that you think of, right?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Last but not least, Just Want to Kill Us, Alien. The aliens from Alien. The other aliens on this list are mostly humanoid. They may be more evolved than humans, but at least they think, act, and move in similar ways. Not the xenomorphs. What gives the Alien franchise its power is that the creatures are truly foreign from humanity. They don't just have big foreheads and have rows of teeth, slithering tails, and an obvious desire to kill us in the most gruesome way possible. Considering how few humans have survived encounters with these aliens, it's safe to rank them as one of the least helpful species humans have ever encountered in any media. And I think we can all agree that the xenomorphs are the worst and the least helpful of all extraterrestrial races.
You're not wrong.
If you had an also-rand, if you had, like, on the more helpful and least helpful scale, what is one other race for each of those you would add to this list?
In the list, it's either helpful or not helpful, and I think I would put in, going back to my original answer, putting in the Star Trek Q as kind of being, it could go either way.
Yeah. Yeah, because they showed a little bit of both, the Qs, right? They did nasty stuff, but at the same time, they did pretty awesome stuff, too.
Yeah.
Especially
that kind of depended on their sense of what they deem as morality,
mm-hmm.
or whatever whim they had.
They kind of showed that in the episode where the human girl turns out to be a Q. She didn't know she was a Q.
Yeah, I was going to mention that's the Olivia Dabo episode.
Yeah. That was good. That was a good episode. You want a middle area. You want a...
Yeah, a shade of gray.
Okay.
Would not be bad here.
All right. Sweet. Do you know anything else that she went on to do? That actress?
Well, she was the older sister in the Wonder Years.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She was in Living Daylights with the James Bond movie with Timothy Dalton. She's done a lot of voice work for cartoons, for animated properties. Yeah, she's still working.
Brad Ludwig, a walking, talking IMDb.
Well, I don't know about that, but I know about Olivia Dabo.
You're a stalker fan, aren't
Dear
you?
Dear Stalker Diary. Today, Olivia Dabo made an appearance on a panel.
Growly Bear in chat says that's her sister who was in the James Bond film.
Yes, that would be Miriam Dabo.
All
they,
right.
They look similar.
Yep. Thank you, Growly Bear. I don't know what we'd do without you.
Thank you.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncast.com.
It's been like a month since we last convened here for an episode of the Alien Invasion. I've been very busy. I worked like 33, 34 days in a row. So now that I'm back to a somewhat normal schedule, we can get these episodes out. But what have you been doing in the last month, Brad?
A lot of wedding stuff.
I see that from Facebook.
Yeah. Let's see. We have got the venue locked down and we paid the like 50%. We've got our church paid for, ready to go. Anessa already has her dress.
Wow. You guys are just knocking it out of the park.
She has her shoes. Here's the thing. And a lot of people say that. Anessa's mother lives in Texas, so very far away from where we're at. And she like picks a thing to obsess over and calls Anessa every day about the thing that she's obsessing over. So to make that stop, you make your choice and you do the thing, and then you move on to the next thing to obsess over. So we've got so many things either done or in process that I have a feeling that we'll be able to wrap up the vast majority of our planning and have everything like in line and mostly ready to go by the end of the year.
So you guys will have you'll be able to relax in the final few months before the actual wedding itself.
Possibly. We'll see how that goes.
Any more progress on the Doctor Who themed stuff?
Yes, actually. Oh, and I'm excited about this. Hang on just a second. I will be just a moment.
All right.
So this is going to be for YouTube viewers. Now, if I were to show you this and you were to, say, make this blue and semi-translucent, would you know what this could possibly be?
Part of the sonic screwdriver?
It would not.
Okay.
Another guess is it was in possession of the third Doctor.
Oh.
And we see it glimpsed briefly with, I believe, this past season with Peter Capaldi's Doctor.
Oh, I don't know anything about the thing that you're referring to.
It's a 3D printed version that needs an adjustment because it's not quite symmetrical. The third Doctor originally had this. It was a like a telepathic type crystal from Metabilius 3.
Okay.
And you could use it to do some mind-based things, and he ended up getting this on Metabilius 3. Or no, he was taking it back to Metabilius, something like that. But what I want to do is, well, first correct the sizing so that it is actually symmetrical and looks like shaped like it's supposed to be, and then make a mold of it and then cast it in blue, bluish resin, semi-transparent resin, and make these. So what we're looking to do is have each table be a doctor, and we'll have like the first doctor table, the second doctor table. This would be the like the gifts for the guests at the third table.
Okay.
The third doctor's table.
It's too bad you can't make it so it opens and then have like candy inside or something like that.
Well, it's, you know, it's too, for those of you who are listening to this audio wise, it's about 5 inches in width, and it looks like a hexagonal crystal. So with pointed ends on both sides. So it looks like somebody took a hexagonal object, stretched it out so it's 5 inches long, and then stuck it in like a pencil sharpener. That's because the ends are faceted, but they are pointed. So they, you know, point outwards. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that we're working on. And I'm thinking that we'll have enough time that we can do, you know, like for the second Doctor, we would have like little penny whistles. Like,
yeah, some things are pretty obvious. Right. Others you have to actually think about.
And the thought is we're going to have people from like all over. If you are at the third Doctor's table and you don't want this, but, you know, say you see somebody's got a penny whistle and you'd rather have that, then you could possibly trade. So it'd be a way to, you know, either you like what you got, or you can talk to other people and possibly make a trade and strike up a conversation. So that's what we're doing.
That's this week's wedding update.
Oh, wait. Wedding. Oh, what?
No, not getting the echo.
I think my cat did something to this. Oh, there it is.
It just had to warm up.
Yeah.
So go ahead and do it.
Okay, hang on. Wedding update.
We'll do some producing on that and make a whole full-fledged like like bumper. We'll make a bumper.
We teased it at the front of the show here, but we have an article from geekwire.com in which they pose the question, why these scientists argue that we are turning Earth into an alien planet.
What?
That's what I said. A trio of scientists has just laid out a new classification scheme for planets that would put Earth into a hybrid category making the transition from a diverse photosynthetic-based biosphere to a world dominated by an energy-intensive civilization. The researcher's analysis meshes with the view that humanity's influence has spawned a new geological epoch known as the Anthropocene Age. Now, this isn't the first time scientists have tried to classify planetary realms based on theoretical scales. Perhaps the best known is the Kardashev scale, set up in 1964. That scale proposed three categories. Type 1 for civilizations that could manipulate all the energy resources reaching their home planet. Type 2 for civilizations capable of harnessing all the energy from their home star. Not to be confused with home star runner. And type 3 for civilizations that can control the energy of their home galaxy. And this is where kind of the Dyson sphere sort of stems from. That would be a type 2 civilization because they could harness the power from their star. By that measure, humanity is a zero with some hope of reaching type 1 someday. The authors of the Anthropocene study, University of Rochester, astrophysicist Adam Frank, University of Washington urban ecologist Marina Alberti, and Axel Clyden.
Oh, I know Axel.
He was in Beverly Hills, right?
Yes.
He was a cop from Detroit.
Axel F.
An earth scientist at the Max Planck Institute of Biogeochemistry propose a scale that would take in a wider range of environments with or without life. So here it goes. Class 1, worlds with no atmosphere, such as Mercury or Earth's moon. Class 2, worlds with a thin atmosphere but no current life, such as Venus. Class 3, worlds with a thin biosphere and some biotic activity, but not enough to affect the environment as a whole. Now, early Mars might serve as an example for that, if life was present there billions of years ago. Class 4 worlds with a thick biosphere, sustained by photosynthetic activity with a strong effect on planetary energy flow. And finally, Class 5, worlds that are profoundly affected by the activity of an advanced energy-intensive species. Now, the researchers contend that Earth is in the transition between Class 4 and 5. So what difference does a classification system make? The authors say that the shift in perspective could help policymakers focus on managing the co-evolution of humanity and its host planet. So for more on that, you can click the show notes and go to the geekwire.com story and get all the details.
You know, I wonder if Star Trek based their class planets, you know, class M, class whatever, I forget the rest of them, on a scale like that. It's not exactly the same, but it seems like it's got the earmarks of Star Trek's classification for their planets.
Let's see.
Yeah, let's go to the actual documentation.
Here we go. Wikipedia. Class ABC, typically small young planets whose class depends on their age and solidity of their cores. Class D are planetoids like asteroids and some moons. Class EFG, proto-Earth-sized planets whose class depends on their age and solidity of core. Class H appear to be a series of harsh desert worlds. Class I are gas giants, such as super gas giants. Class J are just regular class giants. Class K are barren worlds with no native life. Class L planets are barely habitable worlds with primitive ecosystems. Class M we know about. Class N planets are like Venus, have a reducing environment and a barren and rocky with extremely high temperature surfaces causing thick atmospheres, blah, blah, blah. Class O and P covered almost completely with water or water ice in the case of class P. Class Q planets are with continually changing environments caused by peculiar orbits.
Okay.
Class R are a that would be a rogue planetary body that does not orbit a star but drifts in space. Class S, a gas giant smaller than Class T, and the next larger size up from Class J. Class T, the largest class of gas giant. Class, and then we jump up to Class Y. I like that we go A through T and then
it's
Y.
Well, it's like they're trying to fill all the alphabet.
It's somewhat. This is interesting. Okay, Class Y are referred to as demon worlds, where surface conditions do not fall into any other recognized category. Such worlds are usually hostile and lethal to humanoid life. If life develops on these worlds, they usually take on many bizarre forms like living rock or crystal or incorporeal, dimensional, or energy-based states. Demon planets are Tholia, like the Tholians, and the Medusans would fall into life from those planets. And Class X and Z reserved for other designations of demon planets.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it's like they held those in reserve. So there you go.
You can really drill down, be very specific with your planet type.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com, or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a zone. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
Every episode, we run down an incident where somebody witnessed what may or may not be an extraterrestrial craft. Most the time, they're not, I'm guessing. Some of the times, they could be. And this definitely is in that some of the time it could be, could very well be. So the title of this is Crystal Clear Flying Saucer Captured on Camera by Father and Son. And I got this from express.co.uk, one of our favorite places, one of our favorite sources for all things extraterrestrial.
Heck yeah.
The two amazing pictures of the circular metallic-looking object were snapped by Roy and Ralph Keane when they were in their back garden in Kilsyth, Melbourne, Australia. The pair sent them to veteran British UFO investigator Philip Mantle to examine. I didn't include this in my part of the story, but the original source material said that this Philip Mantle is retiring, and this is like his last case that he worked on. A letter alongside the snaps read, "The darker picture was hurriedly taken at approximately 1 p.m. using an incorrect light setting during overcast weather conditions." So this guy knows his photography, sounds like. The other photo was taken at approximately 1:30. So this possible extraterrestrial craft was really hanging around for a while. After the camera setting had been adjusted to obtain a lighter picture, and by that time the weather had greatly improved. They said that each time it was photographed, it appeared to move on a trajectory to their right as they looked up. The father and son added, almost immediately after each picture was taken, the flying object seemed to momentarily hover, then dip and move to the left. Eventually, it disappeared behind trees. An expert enhanced the picture to look for any evidence of a hoax, and his report said using extreme gamma adjustments and edge detection algorithms, No supporting wires or other linear edge features were found, so the object is not suspended by wire. As the cloud contrast is good, this would have been found. Oh, okay, so you'd be able to see it because comparing the object to the cloud in the background. I'm guessing that's what that means. So, Brad, as I always do with my sightings, do you want to take a look at it and be the second judge in this trial? The pitchers are on trial, Brad, and you're the judge. What say you?
I'm going to share this with the folks at home.
Okay, so if you guys want to see this and you're listening to the podcast, just head over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/galacticnetcasts, and you'll be able to see it.
I don't know if they're crystal based on these pictures, but they are something. Normally when you think of a disc-shaped UFO, it's got a thin sort of a brim, but this has a thicker brim to it, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a dome in the center, a little ways in from the edge of the object.
It looks like a sombrero.
Kind of, or if somebody took a bowler hat.
Oh, yeah. That's
and
it.
Made the brim a bit thicker and just whew, and threw it out there. The bottom looks flat from the lower image here of the two that we have. They're stacked on top of each other, which is why I say it's the lower image. The thing that's kind of wrecked this for us a little bit is drones.
Yeah.
And drones are cool. Drones are very useful, but now it's even harder. ruling out CGI and using like After Effects and other programs like that, that you can alter video and add things to. But, and I'm not saying that this looks like a drone, but we have no real sense of scale here. We can see a little bit of the edge of a tree, but like the rest of the area it's kind of foggy behind it. So we really don't have any other good judge of size.
Yeah.
So without that, it's really, really hard to say what it is. And I'm not saying that he's making this up either. He may have been bamboozled, or it could be legitimate. We really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Technology has made it really hard, right?
It really has. It really has. And what are you going to do? Yeah. You know?
All right. So take a look at the pictures. We'll have the link in the show notes. You can take a look at it or watch the video and look at it there. And you be the judge. Let us know what you think. 805-328-3966. Is it a real alien extraterrestrial craft or something entirely different? Let us know. Okay. 10-4. Over and out. That's your sighting.
Good right. Buddy.
How would you like to be our partner? Brad, do you want another partner?
Sure. Who doesn't?
Yeah. We could use all the partners we could get. And you could be our partner just by going to gncasts.com/support and clicking on that Patreon link. And there's different levels of partners. There's the basic one where you just $1 a month. And then we have the bonuses that you get. For example, getting your name mentioned on the podcast or even getting a whole message read. Say you want to promote a book coming out. I'm talking to you, JF Dubow. You could put a message on all of our podcasts, but on this podcast too. We'll read a message. Another level is you get bonus content. So please become our partner. We'd really appreciate it. Go to gncasts.com/support.
The galaxy far, far away feels closer now than ever before, and your guides through this galaxy are ready to help. I'm Zach Hagenbusher, one half of the new Jedi Archives podcast with Ben Schultz. Join us every other Tuesday for our experiences with the Star Wars saga, from the core films that we know and love, well, you know, some of them, to the annals of history and the works that shaped Star Wars into what we know it as today. Just jump in wherever you'd like. Download an episode of the new Jedi Archives today.
Let's do our picks and warnings, shall we?
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
Time to talk about things that we have watched, listened to, read, played, made, you know, entertained our senses with, that have something to do with aliens. I like the one that you had two episodes ago. It was My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, where it was just, just barely made the cut when it comes to aliens. So we could be talking about anything, really. And let's find out what we are talking about this week. Brad, what do you got?
Anissa and I got a 49-inch Roku TV.
Wait a second. Roku makes TVs now?
Well, it's... I can't remember the name of the company. The Roku technology is built into the television. We've integrated Amazon Video, Amazon Prime Video into it. So we were looking for something to watch, and I was flipping through some stuff because, you know, we watch Netflix and Hulu all the time. So we figured we'd change it up. And I found something that I thought would be kind of interesting. And it's called Ancient Aliens and the New World Order. This was done by Jim Mars.
Oh, this is not Mars. This is not the TV show Ancient Aliens.
No, it is not.
Oh, okay.
It is not with the Greek gentleman with the crazy hair.
We're not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens and not that guy?
Yes, okay. It's not that guy. But Jim Mars actually has written a lot of interesting books, and a lot of them involve conspiracy theories. Like he did, like he's written a very famous JFK book. We only watched maybe 10 minutes into it because that's about all we could stand. You know, he's an older gentleman and he's sitting at his desk looking at his computer monitor while he's talking about conspiracy theories related to aliens. And he got into Nibiru, which is the, you know, the ninth planet, and
Planet X.
Planet X and all that, and whatever your political affiliation might be, he did not believe in global warming or climate change. Let's be accurate with that. But he believes, at least not that it's man-made, okay? But he's willing to entertain the fact that by, what is it, 2062 or something like that, supposedly Nibiru, Planet X, is supposed to swing around because it orbits every 3,000 years. And what what's happening right now is a result of Nibiru coming back. And I think at that point, we kind of checked out.
I don't blame you.
And admittedly, there's no real true science to back up that claim. Yes, he used Sumerian clay tablets, but for science to be science, there needs to be a follow-up. And yes, right now there are astronomers who are seeing evidence that we probably do have a body of some sort, probably fairly large, that does orbit, but they have yet to find it, which, you know, is all well and good. But to say definitively that that's what's happening when we can't even find it, if it's going to be here in 60 years, we should be seeing something. The sun should be reflecting off of it somewhere. And it's we don't have the data. We don't have the evidence to support that. So we just kind of checked out and stopped watching. So my warning, because I've done a lot of picks, this is my warning. Unless you're into conspiracy theories and have no problem sitting through and listening to somebody else's conspiracy theory, I wasn't in the mood for it. Sometimes I am. I wasn't that night, and I checked out and we watched something else. We've actually been watching a Canadian sitcom that stopped being produced in 2009 called Corner Gas.
Oh, yeah, Corner Gas.
Yeah, which is like a huge thing in Canada.
Yeah, it is. That and Degrassi, and or the high guys, the guys that smoke pot. They're I forget.
Oh, the Trailer Park Boys.
Yeah, Trailer Park Boys. Yeah.
Yeah. Corner Gas is great, but we're doing Alien Invasion. So, yeah, Ancient Aliens and the New World Order. Unless you're into conspiracy theories, we couldn't sit through it. We just couldn't. So, and that's on Amazon, and we'll have a link in the show notes if you want to check it out.
Link to hell, since it's a warning.
It is a warning. If you do have Amazon Prime, it is free to watch. If you do not have Amazon Prime, I don't know what it would cost to rent or whatever, but there okay. You go.
All right. And flying saucers, how many of them?
-1.
I think that's our first negative flying saucer rating. Thank you, Brad. I was rummaging around here in the basement today looking for something Steph wanted, and I ran into Dave's box of nostalgia. It's kind of a peek into my past a little bit. The first thing I'm going to show you, and this is definitely something that you'll want to watch the YouTube video for. I'll describe this stuff, and Brad, you can jump in and describe it as best we can. But the first thing is my collection of Marvel comic books, the series based on Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. And this is reprints of the original Marvel comic book based on the movie from 1977. I paid a full $1 for these back in probably 1977. And it's interesting because, as I recall, it gives you more of a story than the actual movie. Like, it throws other things in that I don't know are part of canon anymore or not. But you've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 issues here. Six issues. And if you're a Star Wars purist, there's a lot to nitpick about these, including the color of Luke's and Ben Kenobi's, Obi-Wan's lightsaber. They're both red, which I don't think they were in the movie. And I think this is one of the cases of, and they did this with Star Trek, before it even hit the air, there was a comic book company publisher in, I think, Britain or somewhere in Europe that actually produced Star Trek comic books, and they look nothing like the series. There's the characters are the same names, and the ship kind of looks like the Enterprise, but that's where it stops. Everything else is like completely different because they didn't have a reference to go by. They just kind of guessed, best guessed. And this has the earmarks of that, like Chewbacca looks like an ape. Brad, there's Chewbacca. Oh, yeah. Looks like an ape. Individually, these would have cost you 35 cents each back in 1977.
Back in the day, yeah.
Another great thing about these is the ads. The ads are awesome. Like, there's the prizes are cash. This seems shady. But things that you could get would be like radio-controlled race car, stereo record player. There's a guitar. All kinds of fun stuff. And then there's the Green Army Man right there.
Yeah.
And then there's ads for, like, Orca. There's Spider-Man in here somewhere. Yeah, Spider-Man. Yeah, so that's the first thing I wanted to show on Show and Tell. The second thing was we move on from Star Wars to Star Trek, and this is the Star Trek giant poster book, Voyage 7, from March 1st, 1977. So there's James T. Kirk on the cover, and it's a whole story. It's a poster. But then on the back of the poster is just like the regular magazine with all kinds of cool information about the series. But then you would, you know, once you got done reading it, you would put it on your wall. And I think I actually had this on my wall growing up, the poster. And then one more thing, Star Trek book and record set. So it was basically a comic book, but with a 45 record inside, so you would listen to it and follow along in the book. I need to find what they call the thing that goes in the center. I think it's a spider.
Oh, yeah. The adapter?
Yeah, the adapter to play it on a regular record player. This is another case of things just slightly wrong or slightly different from the series. Like, just like Captain Kirk looks different. The bridge looks slightly... Like, there's a control area, and I don't know what character this is. But Brad, tell me what this looks like.
An organ.
An organ, yes. But that's supposed to be part of the bridge.
It's like he's standing in front of a Wurlitzer about to give a performance.
Yeah, it does. That's from Dave's Box of Nostalgia, and we may be dipping back into that again. But you might be able to find these things on Amazon, so I will make an attempt to find the links and put those in the show notes. That's my pick, and I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5 because that was some awesome stuff from my childhood, and I'd love to relive all this stuff all over again. So,
yeah, it's really fun to, you know, and I've got a crap ton of comics down in the basement. So it's always fun to pop one of the older ones open and go, oh wow, that was a thing.
Yeah, and just like looking at the credits on these comic books, you know, like. That Stan Lee presents Star Wars. Excelsior. Stan Lee. Damn, Stan Lee. Anyways, there you go. That's my pick. To review my pile of nostalgia, and Brad had that crappy documentary show.
Ugh.
Yuck.
Just could not get into it.
Get that bad taste out of your mouth.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going gncast.com/subscribe or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
So that is going to do it for this edition of the Alien Invasion, a Galactic Network podcast. If you'd like to know more, learn more, read more about the stories that we covered on this episode, click the links in the show notes. We have a number of people we'd like to thank, including Monkey Warhol for providing our intro music, the song called Alien Syndrome. You can find that at soundcloud.com/Monkey Warhol, and I believe he's got some new material. So check out, again, soundcloud.com/Monkey Warhol, and check out his new stuff. Also, Retward von Dernberg, a composer from Germany, for our closing song called Be Water. Learn more about him and his music at thecaravel.net. And finally, thanks to Ben Olson.
Hi, Ben.
For recording our disclaimer audio at the very start of this episode. Go to benolson.com for more about him. All right, Brad, final thoughts. What you got there?
Yeah, Jim Mars makes me sad. I want that 15 minutes of my life back.
Do you think he's still alive? Is this guy still kicking around?
You know, that's a very good question. I can find out for you in just... Oh, he passed... Oh, geez. He passed away the beginning of last month.
Oh, wow. That's pretty timely, isn't it?
Yeah, he passed away August 2nd of 2017.
Okay.
He is famous for... The movie JFK was based off of his stuff.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of based on his writings, his research, his theories on it.
Let's see. The film was adapted by Stone and Zachary Sklar from the books On the Trail of the Assassins by Jim Garrison and Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy by Jim Mars.
Okay.
So it was kind of a combination of a couple of books.
Okay, then. On that note...
Thank you, Oliver Stone.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's gncast.com.